Hey, it's John from CityCast. If you're in the mood to pamper yourself a little bit this week while supporting cruelty-free products, you should check out Bon Coeur Home and Wellness. It's the best place in Portland to find everything from chic home decor to cannabis accessories. They've got a curated collection of vegan and cruelty-free home goods and wellness products because their name is French for kind heart, after all. You'll get a 20% discount on your first order when you sign up for emails this week at boncoeur.net. That's boncoeur.net and use the code BONCOEURCITYCAST20.
Today on CityCast Portland, we're talking about Commissioner Renee Gonzalez letting go of Portland Street Response and the continuing saga of your mailbag comments on the Oregon bottle bill and the proposed St. John's bottle drop. Joining me on this midweek roundup is our very own executive producer, John Tariani. It's Tuesday, March 5th. I'm Claudia Meza, and this is what Portland's talking about. Welcome to the Midweek Roundup, everyone. John, thanks for being here. Welcome back, buddy.
Hey, thank you, Claudia. It's good to be back. I was out of town for a couple days, but I'm back in the saddle.
Yeah. Couple days?
It was a couple days. I know it felt like an eternity, but I've been super enjoying listening to the last few episodes that I wasn't a part of, and I'm glad to be back.
Oh, I would never listen to the show if I weren't on it.
Just John Tariani hosting. Forget that.
Oh my God, stop. Well, before we jump in, we actually have breaking news update on our St. John's bottle drop story that we shared this past Friday roundup. This piece of news was submitted by Anisha Conlon, the editor of the St. John's Review, which, John, I don't know if you know this, is incidentally Portland's oldest community newspaper. I just learned that. It's part of their banner, but I was like, really?
It makes me so happy whenever I'm in like a restaurant or a coffee shop and see a copy of like the St. John's Review. I just love seeing local neighborhood publications. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it's like local. And I was going through it, and it's not like, you know, imagine a girl draws a unicorn or whatever, which, by the way, that was once a headline in an Olympia when I was in college, and it was like, imaginative girl loves unicorns. You know what I mean? And it's just like, she had like a unicorn brand, whatever. Anyhow, I was just like, what?
My first brush with journalism as a kid was in my hometown in Michigan when I won an ugly shoe contest. That was my first feature in the local media.
I'm sorry, more info.
It was like a summer festival in the park. And like one of the things for the kids, they had an ugly shoe contest. And I won for having the ugliest shoes.
Oh my God, what were your shoes?
They were just like normal shoes. I think like me and my friend got together and we like ripped them up and like rubbed mud on them. But I had a photo of me with my ugly shoes in the Farmington Observer once upon a time.
That's amazing. You know, your mom was like, those were brand new.
Oh yeah, yeah, that's...
Mom Natariani was not that happy. So anyhow, it seems that Commissioner Carmen Rubio's chief of staff submitted a statement on behalf of her team to the St. John's Review, saying that she's concerned and has expressed so to state leadership. Commissioner Rubio has also directed the city planning department to explore alternative locations in North Portland. This is a direct quote from her chief of staff. Commissioner Carmen Rubio has also directed me to begin conversations with the Oregon Beverage Recycling Cooperative, and I have done that at a staff level. I will be meeting with the OBRC leadership next week. Please note that the initial administrative decision, which is like she gave us an acronym, LUCS, related to the proposed site, isn't coming anytime soon.
The saga continues.
Yeah. She's clearly not making any promises, but it seems like we at least have one commissioner looking into it. And yeah, thank you, Commissioner Carmen Rubio. We have a listener that is that has noted that we might have a bias to Commissioner Rubio because we mentioned her a few times speaking about headlines she was involved in. But now I'm just like, no, he might be right.
We'll come for you, Rubio. Your day will come.
Your day will come, but not now. Thank you. This is great.
Not on this episode.
Well, anyhow, just want to shout out again, Anisha Conlon from St. John's Review. This is the kind of work they're doing. It's awesome. And maybe we'll have her on one day. So, John, what do you have for us today?
I'm looking at the work of another city commissioner, Renee Gonzalez, and we're talking about Portland Street Response. This is the organization that is trying to create like a more equitable way of dealing with people in crisis, trying to not just send police when someone's dealing with a mental illness. It's a program that's been around for a couple years. It's gotten a lot of really good press, and it's also been troubled in terms of its funding, in terms of where it sits within the city government. Well, this week, Commissioner Gonzalez says he's looking at moving PSR out of the Fire Bureau, which is where it's been living since it was created in Portland Fire and Rescue. There's discussions underway to move it into the Community Safety Division. That's overseen by the mayor, Ted Wheeler, and the two have been working on plans and in discussions about this move for a couple weeks. Shane Dixon Kavanaugh from the Oregonian did some great reporting on this, and he says he got his hands on a document that was created by the mayor's office called Transition Notes for Portland Street Response, sort of looking at what this change could mean. It could be a big change and something that has been discussed many times over the course of the last year or so about where this organization should live within the city bureaucracy. Yeah.
Yeah. The police department. But did you know that? I mean, you weren't here last Friday, but there was we did a story about the police union wanting to add a few things to the accountability board that over 80% of us voted for. And one of the things was basically to empower Portland Street Response, to include it within the police response. And I'm just like, I feel like they want it. They understand how it's really helping them out, not to have to go to all these calls that they're just like, we don't know what to do.
Exactly. I mean, there was a report that came out from PSU looking at Portland Street Response, and it said 98% of the calls that Portland Street Response is handling would have otherwise been handled by the police. You know, it's worth pointing out, Portland Street Response has been in tension with the fire department basically ever since it got started. There's been plenty of stories talking about how there's sort of been a cultural butting of heads in between the people who are doing this work and the sort of standard way that the fire department operates. And this idea of moving it out of the fire department, like I said, it's not new. It was discussed last year. It was recommended in a report last year. At the time, Renee Gonzalez says he wanted to hold off on that move. He was like, no, let's sort of wait and see how this develops. But it does seem like it would be a lot more naturally at home in the police department or like under community safety as well.
Right. Exactly. Because it is. Yes. And also, not only was there a culture clash, I mean, they were essentially fighting for the same funding.
Yeah.
And I think that really exacerbated that issue. But you know what I found interesting is that in this article, it seemed that it was Commissioner Gonzalez's desire to do this. And in other articles I read, or also just speaking to people in City Hall, it seems that maybe it was taken from him. So I'm confused which one it is.
Yeah. I mean, you know, this is sort of like reading the tea leaves on the politics of this proposal, right?
Yeah.
Fun fact, Joanne Hardesty, who created this whole program, said last year that she thought it would be a good idea for it to go to the Community Safety Division. She'd proposed that this was something that she hoped would happen. And, you know, I think that Commissioner Gonzalez is rightly seeing that it has become less of an asset and like more of a political liability for him at this point. And as the leader of the Fire Bureau, he has not exactly been an amazing advocate for Portland Street Response either. So
no,
yeah.
It was Commissioner Carmen Rubio who has proposed to save it with funding. But something I wanted to point out, because I did like kind of stir the pot a little and be like, did he do this willingly or was it taken away? Just a sneak preview, we are having Mayor Ted Wheeler on the show
tomorrow.
And he spoke a little bit about the need for the commissioners to give up some control of the bureau so we could start the shift over to a city administrator. And so it's one of the reasons why I've been looking into it, because I'm just like, ooh, how's everyone feeling about that? You know, I know that, just so you know, the bureaus already have directors. Like, they run on their own, you know, like they're in charge of themselves in a sense. What the commissioners do is they oversee and they are the flow between City Hall and the bureaus, you know?
Yeah.
So I'm just curious, like, how that's going to change stuff.
Yeah, yeah. I'm pretty interested in the funding question, though, as well, right? So, like we said, part of the conflict with Portland Street Response was that the Fire Bureau was looking at a budget deficit, was proposing cutting potentially $3 million from this program's budget. We're still going to need to come up with the money to fund Portland Street Response, because a lot of its funding so far has come from American Rescue Plan dollars, right? It comes from like COVID era money that was one-time cash that is expiring. So even though this is a very popular program, even though it has a lot of public support, no matter where it's at in the city bureaucracy, we're going to need to find some money to be able to support it. And like, you know, maybe the police department or community safety isn't quite as strapped as Portland Fire right now, but I can't imagine that they have millions of dollars to throw around at this point either.
I have to also add, well, not a pushback, but just like, well, it's not so much about funding at this point. It's also about advocacy. It really needs an advocate because, John, there was funding for it. And Commissioner Gonzalez did not apply for it.
Yeah, yeah, there was federal funding.
So we got to say that. Like, there was funding for it last year. It was federal funding. And even Senator Wyden was like, hey, guy, how about you're in charge of this? Why don't you get some funding? And it didn't happen. It's like the money is out there. What it needs is an advocate.
Let me just say one more thing, though, sort of on the back of what you're saying about it having an advocate. Like, I do wonder about the cultural problem that this organization might have within the police department as well. You know, the same sort of cultural butting of heads that happened in the fire department could happen in the police department as well. And especially with what we're looking at to the changes in Measure 110 that are going through right now, I could imagine a situation where one half of the police department is looking at incarcerating people and this other part of the same community safety division is trying to work with people in a non-confrontational way. I am really curious to see how they're going to make those two things work side by side.
Well, maybe the ideal solution isn't that they're inside the police department, even though we're just like, well, that seems like it makes most sense, but they work alongside, you know?
Right. Yeah. Let me be clear. It's like they're looking at moving it into community safety, a portion of which is the police department. They would not be a sub-bureau of the police department, as far as I understand.
Yeah. Well, John, thanks for breaking down that story. I don't know. It was a glimmer of hope, I'll be honest, when I read that. Because I'm, you know, showing my bias. I'm a huge advocate for the Portland Street Response. I think it's something we're doing right, and it's something that we should encourage. It seems now to have a home, which is before it was precarious.
Yeah. I think it's a good news. And I also just like what it says about the ability for local government to be nimble and to change things, which is something that we are not always good at as a city as well.
It's true. Well, let's take a quick break here. And when we come back, we're going to dip into our mailbag. So before we jump into our mailbag, we just wanted to mention that this will be the last week that you could become a founding member of CityCast Portland after March 8th. You could still become a member, but not a founding one. Founding members get bragging rights of saying that you supported us way back before everyone else did. And I think you could officially call everyone else who joins afterwards a poser. I might have to check the fine print, but I believe that's a perk.
Yeah, I think that's written into the rules somewhere for sure. You know, I also just want to note that the podcast and the newsletter, they're going to continue to be free. The membership is just a way to support something that you believe in and that you want to keep around for a really long time. So while you're listening this morning, just pop on your phone or your computer, go to portland.citycast.fm to help us keep this thing running. And we'll make sure to throw a link into the show notes as well. You can sign up there.
If you're still like, why should I join the membership program? I wanted to point out what Angela G said. She wrote, I enjoy the balanced conversations about issues that affect us. The humorous approach is uplifting at a time when humor doesn't seem to be understood as a balm anymore, which is very sweet.
That's very sweet. It's also nice to know that it's not just you and me who find ourselves funny, but that other people appreciate our dumb sense of humor as well. Thank you for everything, Angela.
I just want you guys to know how much more we're laughing and how much more we're cracking jokes. And we have to cut it out because we're just like, all right, we get it. We're hilarious to each other.
Yeah, I spent a lot of my day editing our own jokes out of this podcast.
Okay, let's go on to our mailbag. Our first note is actually another testimonial from John R. about why he joined. And it's also, it's made the rounds. It's the most shared testimonial in all of CityCast.
John R., you are now CityCast famous. Yeah.
Yeah. So this is what he wrote. Actually, John, why don't you read it? You're a John.
Yeah, us Johns got to stick together. Here we go.
Let's go.
John R. wrote, learned about the podcast early from listening to CityCast CEO and self-satisfied windbag David Plotz. John R.'s words, not mine. Heard him tout the network on Slate's political GabFest. Then, in parentheses, stopped listening to the GabFest due to David Plotz's insufferably condescending treatment of other hosts. Again, John R.'s words, not my words.
Oh my God, John N. does not want to get fired. Go on.
Despite the occasional shade that Claudia casts on Selwood, John R. says, honestly, we're not bad people. I always enjoy listening to her, John, and their guests spitball about the goings-on in our lovely city, and I'd miss the podcast if it failed financially. Assuming service remains sustainable, I hope that one day you'll be able to hire reporters who can spend real time filling in some of the gaps that exist here in our local news environment.
Well, John R., I want you to know that you made a lot of people's days with this. It was hilarious. David Plotz is our CEO. He has a wonderful sense of humor, so he found this.
He was the one that shared it with us originally. He's the one that pointed
out. We didn't even notice it. He was like, guys, did you see this? Like, he was so excited. This is pretty close to being framed, I'm pretty sure. Two notes. I do want to make clear that I actually do love Selwood. I frequently say it's the St. John's of the Southeast. I mean, I think a bit wealthier, but it's still the St. John's of the Southeast. It's, you know, we're like two independent communities where everyone's like, wait, this is part of Portland? And you're like, yes, we're part of Portland.
Yeah.
Two, I'm curious, like, you spoke of, you know, hiring reporters who could spend real time filling in some of the gaps that exist in our local news environment. I'm curious, like, what, John R., what do you think that is? I'm just wondering, like, what type of reporting it is. So I want to know what people are thinking about that.
Yeah. Absolutely.
So the rest of the mailbag is actually centered around either the bottle bill or the St. John's bottle drop. Ever since we brought up the bottle bill, and this was weeks ago, this is before St. John's, the bottle drop, you know, announcement came. People have so many opinions about this bottle bill. John, do you remember? It was one of these midweek roundups, mm-hmm. and I presented how nuanced and layered this story is about how people are connecting the bottle bill with an increase of crime, with a fentanyl addiction, all these things, you know?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
At this point, I feel like listeners are commenting to each other.
Well, I mean, it's interesting because I don't think we've ever had something where we've gotten such an array of opinions on it, you know, fiercely in favor of it, fiercely opposed to it, and like everywhere in between.
Yeah. Well, Dylan reached out via voicemail and he basically was commenting to another listener. His name's Jim Tung, and Jim was stating, hey, we should basically raise the deposit amount from 5 to like 38 cents or something like that. And then that way people will actually bring their cans back. So our listener, Dylan, was just like, you know, poppycock. He didn't say that. Those are my words. He was just like, we already have a recycling program. And then Dylan's got a point. We do have a pretty successful recycling program. Anyhow, but the other voicemail, and we'll play this one. It was in response to our story about St. John's possibly getting a new bottle drop location. And it's not just any bottle drop location. It would be like an actual waste facility transfer station, meaning like one of those huge ones like they have in Delta Park. You know, it's not like, oh, it's a little thing in Safeway or whatever. It would take up like almost half a block. Anyhow, mm-hmm. in it, I basically said that I think a big reason that the city was focusing a lot of their efforts into corralling what they would consider an eyesore out of downtown into St. John's is because we're not heavily touristed and it's pretty hard to get here. And so a listener had this to say.
I'm calling about this bottle drop. I wanted to mention a few things. I mean, I am vehemently opposed because not only is it an industrial site in a residential neighborhood that will create a bottleneck in an already bottlenecked area, we already have a very local, cared for, houseless community. You know, there's outreach every single Wednesday in the plaza. They come into my shop. I try to help them as much as I can, you know, with clothes and things like that. But, I mean, this will imperil our already imperiled houseless community, in my opinion. But also, You mentioned that people don't come here from out of town, but that's not true. Every single day I get tourists from California. We have some real Keystone stores in St. John's, which like Blue Moon brings people from all over the country because there are not other stores like this in most of the country. If they do take the trek to come out to St. John's, they have to pass this site to get into St. John's. This is their welcoming. They're like, oh my God, like, I'm going to see this hideous industrial site on the way to St. John's. That's the welcoming committee.
Well, John, what do you think?
I think neighborhoods like St. John's are interesting because a couple of years ago, everybody was worried that St. John's was going to just turn into a million condos and high-rise developments, right? And now the argument, while that is still a risk, like the argument is also being made that like, no, we don't want these industrial, type buildings in our community as well. And it is just a really complicated question about how you maintain that homeostasis in a community that is inherently undergoing change. And who gets to make the decisions about what those buildings are going to be and like what the use of the land is going to be as well.
Yeah, it should be the community. What I wanted to address was something that Stephanie pointed out where she's like, hey man, people do come to St. John's. And I just want to note, like, yeah, you're right, Stephanie. I totally forgot about Blue Moon. And of course, you know, I don't know about all the smaller businesses that, as yourself, that also get a bunch of tourist dollars. But I just do want to say that in comparison to downtown, in comparison to even like Alberta District, St. John's doesn't see that traffic. I know this just because of numbers, because I'm involved with certain organizations that track these numbers. And I know how much we get in comparison. That's what I was speaking of, but you are 100% right. We still get people coming in who would basically base their opinion on Portland with the way St. John's appears. So that's something also to think about.
And I imagine that since St. John's and neighborhoods like St. John's do have a fair amount of the tourism coming in, but not this fire hose of transplants that some of the other neighborhoods get, that like small business owners like Stephanie are more susceptible to fluctuations in foot traffic and to fluctuations in the number of people that are coming through as well.
Exactly. Yes. So, I mean, anything that would deter that would be, it would hurt our local businesses. And that was the whole point about this, is like when it comes down to it, it really shouldn't be there. It's an industrial site. It should be in an industrial zone, not next to literally like it's next to some housing. And then there's all these businesses around it. It just makes no sense why it would be there.
Yeah.
But yeah, before we wrap up, I just want to, I have one last mailbag. I've been holding it from you, John. This is a surprise.
Oh. I am excited and terrified. Let's go.
All right. Listener Devin M. wrote in and he said, hey, this person on TikTok couldn't come up with a state sandwich for Oregon, and nothing struck me as obvious, so I thought I'd serve this up to you all in case you needed some low-stakes banter material.
Right on, Devin.
Yeah, I mean, trust me, we got plenty to banter. We cut out half of the stuff we're saying. But here's the deal, Devin. I follow this TikTok account. I think it's like the Sandwiches of the United States or States. I forget what the name of the account is called. And so they couldn't figure out what to do for Oregon, so they made one up, and it was called a crab melt. And it looked delicious. But when I thought about it, I was like, wait, I can't think of one sandwich from Oregon.
Mm-hmm.
Can you?
You know what I think should be? If it is up to me to campaign, I think that Oregon should go really bold, put their flag in the grilled cheese and tomato soup. Because we've got amazing cheese, we've got incredible tomatoes and produce, and like we should start a campaign that like the Oregon grilled cheese and tomato soup is like the thing.
But I mean, are we known for our tomato? Okay. All right. Fine. Sure.
I had literally no time to think about this. So that was
okay. He's like, I'm giving you the best I got. Don't you start questioning this. So check this out. It's a question actually to all our listeners. What is Oregon's state sandwich? I want to hear it.
Yeah. I want to hear it too. I feel like I'm stumped. I don't know the answer.
I literally have nothing. Trying to think, I'm just like, I don't know. Like,
and I at least have no good ideas, clearly.
Yeah, a patty melt? No, that's not us. When I think of our history, I'm just like, a lot of people dying on the way here. Exclusion of lots of people of color. What's a sandwich? You know? Okay. Well, if you can think of one, if you can make that delicious, I want to hear about it.
Get at us. Yeah.
Awesome. Well, John, thank you so much for being here. Welcome back. Glad to have you back, bud.
Thank you. Yeah, it's been great. Glad to be here. Thanks, Claudia.
And thank you, everyone, for listening. Well, that's all for today here on CityCast Portland. Thanks so much for listening. We'll be back tomorrow morning with more from around the city. Until then, see you at Slim's.